The Pat Kenny Show
with Timber Living Log Cabins.
Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. on News Talk. Conversation that counts.
Earlier this week, Oscar Brannock received a miscarriage of justice certificate in relation to his wrongful conviction for the Sallins train robbery. And this is Oscar himself speaking to The Hard Shoulder this week.
I heard screams in my cell and I was taken out of my cell and taken down to a tunnel that leads from the Bridewell to the district court. And when I saw the gate was closed, I realised I was going to get a beating because there was loads of detectives there. What I soon realised was that it wasn't a beating, it was in fact becoming torture.
So how did an innocent man end up behind bars? Patsy McGarry, Irish Times contributor and author of While Justice Slept, joins me now to tell us about what was known as the Heavy Gang. Patsy, good morning and welcome.
Thank you, Pat.
Now let's go back to what precipitated all of the events which led to the certificate being given to Oscar Brannock during the week. It began with the train robbery.
It began with the train robbery 50 years ago on the 31st of March 1976, when about £250,000, which is a lot of money in those times, was taken off a train. The driver was slightly injured and the gang got away. And the guard, they rounded up, to use the phrase, the title of the book, the usual suspects. Protesters, basically, who were fairly hard Republicans, including Oscar Brannock, Nicky Kelly, Brian McNally in particular. And they were badly bruised or emerged badly bruised after encounters with Gardaí over the following approximately 48-hour period, brought before the district court and were charged in connection with the robbery, all three of them. And it went to trial in 1978, and the first trial was a phenomenon in its own right. It became the longest trial in history before it collapsed. And it collapsed because one of the judges was deemed to be sleeping. All sorts of ridiculous things were undertaken by counsel for the defence.
I mean, they tried to waken him, to pretend he was never asleep. What did they do? What kind of...
Paddy McEntee, the leading counsel for the defendants, basically started dropping books from a height to make a noise. The judge of concern, just John O'Connor, to waken him up. Called for toilet breaks. And it wasn't working. Neil Kiley wrote an article in Hibernia magazine. And it was a risky thing to do because they could have been up for contempt of court.
Claiming that the judge was asleep.
Asserting that the judge was sleeping. And nothing happened. So anyhow, it went too far as counsel was concerned. And McEntee formally put it to the three judges that one of them had been falling asleep. They were very annoyed about this. They retreated to their chambers to consider the matter and found as a finding of fact that Judge O'Connor was not sleeping. This was appealed all the way to the Supreme Court. And really, the judges on the higher levels met it with great disdain and anger themselves that this would be asserted. And they stood by the finding that he had not been sleeping. And a few weeks afterwards, after the trial resumed, Judge O'Connor died. He had a cardiac condition and it transpired he was in medication for the cardiac condition.
Which was causing him to be drowsy and fall asleep.
Yeah.
So has there ever been kind of an apology from the judiciary about getting it so wrong?
Not at all. And in fact, that was only the first of many things people would assert, including myself, that they got wrong in this whole long saga that's gone on for 50 years. The trial, after 65 days, already the most expensive in the history of the state, had to be collapsed. And it's resumed again at the end of 1978. And the big issue there, as always, was whether the confessions beaten out of these men, alleged, would be accepted as evidence. And when it was decided by the Special Criminal Court in the second trial that the confessions were to be accepted as evidence, people like the three men concerned, Oscar Brannock, Brian McNally and Nicky Kelly, knew their goose was cooked. Nicky Kelly fled, went abroad, ended up in America. Brian McNally, he was sentenced in his absence to 12 years penal servitude. Brian McNally was sentenced to 9 years penal servitude. And Oscar Brannock was sentenced to 12 years penal servitude. And in accepting the confessions, the three judges, Special Criminal Court, accepted that the men had been abused, the medical evidence was there.
The Gardaí were claiming that they had beaten themselves up.
That was, and they were put in to a man. There were a number of others involved at this stage of the case. To a cell in the Bridewell, which is against the Bridewell's own rules, where people are charged with a similar fine. But there was an exception. The exception was Oscar Brannock. Oscar Brannock was only ever in the company of Gardaí, even in the evidence given to court. So the only conclusion, and he was immediately hospitalised after he signed the confession in the Richmond Hospital as it was then. So the only conclusion that could be arrived at by common sense people is that Oscar Brannock had beaten himself up so badly he had to be hospitalised. And yet that was basically what the courts accepted, and they accepted his confession. alleged.
Meantime, Nicky Kelly is on the run. He eventually, there's an appeal, and they win the appeal. Oscar Brannock wins his appeal.
About 15 months later, Oscar Brannock and Brian McNally are released on appeal because it is deemed that the evidence against them was prepared under oppressive circumstances. That was the word used. Nicky Kelly was in the United States at this stage. Nicky Kelly sees they're freed. He was there. He was convicted on the same grounds as these guys were. He came home absolutely convinced the same would happen to him. It didn't. He was jailed immediately. And he was in jail for 4 years. He went through the courts again and again and again. And to use a term used by the then Chief Justice Tom O'Higgins, he exhausted the appellate jurisdiction of the state, and the state found that he must stay in prison on the same evidence that these men had been released on. I mean, it was crazy.
Then he went on hunger strike and did himself some harm.
He was in hunger strike for 38 days, and he has never physically recovered fully from that. He's had bad health over a number of years and is in and out of hospital currently. There was a fundraiser event for an inquiry into all of this last March, as recently as last March, again, with Christy Moore, Keela, Damien Dempsey, John Spillan, etc., journalists like myself, Justine McCarthy, Jean Kerrigan, etc., and to raise funds. But Nicky came to that, but had to leave early because he was so ill. So anyhow, that was he's had lifelong issues, and they all have had lifelong issues. Like Oscar Brannock has never, or his family, the trauma that he suffered in 50 years ago has beset him all through his life. So anyhow, for Oscar, it was worth it in that he got his declaration of miscarriage of justice last Tuesday.
He was the only one there.
He was the only one there, and poor Brian McNally died 2 months ago, and had he survived the 2 more months, he would have got it as well. Nicky Kelly was pardoned by President Mary Robinson in 1992 as though he'd never been charged or convicted of the crime of robbing the Silent's main train. And all of those men have received compensation in the years. I should say this, Pat. You referred to the book I wrote about Nicky, With Nicky, published in 2006. I interviewed the leader of the IRA gang which perpetrated the robbery, who told me with complete conviction that the guards knew who did it, or became aware into these proceedings who did it, but couldn't go after the real guys because they were so dug into this case that they had to continue with it.
Now, going back to what happened to them that night, I mean, the passageway between the Bridewell and the forecourts, I didn't know there was such a thing, but there is, it would appear. And it's logical that it would, to bring prisoners directly to the forecourts without having to cross the public road, etc., etc. It was in this tunnel that the men were beaten.
Some of them were beaten there. Others were beaten. I mean, Nicky Kelly was beaten by 14 guards over a 47-hour period with breaks in between. He slept about 6 hours, he estimates himself. And his experience was not untypical of what the others said happened to them as well. They were beaten about the place. In his case, he had a chair. He was put lying down on the ground with a chair, the legs of a chair in his hand, and a guard sitting on that. And they're spitting down at him. They physically beat them. They beat them up against these lockers, etc. They were in a particular room he was in. They weren't just beaten in the tunnels. They were beaten in the area of the Bridewell downstairs.
Now, in the case of Oscar Brannock, he did something which might have given a clue to the fact that this confession from him was forced.
Yeah.
What was that?
It's a very minor thing. And it's something a trap I've fallen into myself. Brannock, Irish for Walsh, or Welsh, is always spelt B-R-E-A-T-H in A-C-H. And I've done it myself in articles, and he's checked me on this. The Brannocks, Oscar and his family, only spell the name without a H, as in the middle.
B-R-E-A-T-N-A-C-H.
Correct. But he spelled his name B-R-E-A-T-H in A-C-H on the confession he signed, another indication that this is false.
How did the Gardaí in question act with such impunity? What was the political climate at the time that allowed this carry on?
Well, you could go, it was the 1970s. And in the early 1970s period, I mean, we had a very, very, very strong government, Cosgrave government, a very, very strong Minister for Justice, Paddy Cooney, only died fairly recently. And they were afraid of their lives that the IRA were going to try to overthrow the government of the state, as well as what they were doing in Northern Ireland. The IRA were liberally raiding banks, etc., down here to fund their campaign in Northern Ireland. And this was another example of it, because they did later claim responsibility for raiding the mail train in Silence itself. So, I mean, they basically gave a license to the Gard that you do whatever you must do where any of these Republican groups are concerned to keep them under control. And that's what happened. These men were mainly members of the Irish Republican Socialist Party, which would have been a hard nationalist.
But they had no form of violence or bombing or anything like that. These were political, left-wing political activists.
Agitators. Yeah. Well-known protesters. They were involved in every protest on the streets of Dublin and wherever. And indeed in Northern Ireland, very sympathetic, in particular to the nationalist population in Northern Ireland, but ideologically favouring both communities because that was the view from the Marxist interpretation of what was happening in Northern Ireland at the time. So they were known to the guards and the special branch as protesters, as out in the streets. And I mean, I often think the title used by Gene Kerrigan and Derek Dunn for their 1984 book is so clever. Round up the usual suspects, which of course...
From Casablanca.
From Casablanca.
And Red Arm.
That's right. The French head of police there. Okay, if something happens, round up the usual suspects. And that's what happened. I mean, there was hundreds of people rounded up initially.
Now, this is probably the most notorious aspect of the heavy gang activity. That title, by the way, so-called heavy gang, that was christened by the Irish Times, coined by the Irish Times.
It was by a group of journalists in the paper back in 1977. They got evidence that there was a sort of a core group, had been the murder squad, whose job it was basically to get to use whatever methods they believed necessary to get confessions out of people. And of course, they were involved in the Kerry Babies case. Some of the members of this particular gang with Joanne Hayes and her family, getting them to confess to a murder.
And again, they had a situation in the Kerry Babies where they had a theory which was so outlandish and yet they couldn't leave it alone.
This super fecundity, it was called, that Joanne, who had they're initially arrested in connection with the death of a baby found stabbed in Carrick Sivine Strand, miles away from Aberdourney where the family lived. And then they discovered, as a family did indicate, that there was another remains of a miscarried baby on the farm.
Which was her miscarriage.
But they, again, were so far in, they had to stick with the original story. So they came up with this theory that she had twins by two separate fathers.
Which happens in the cat world, I believe. But
is that true?
Very seldom in humankind.
I didn't think any mammal could do that. But there you are. And they argued this at the Tribunal of Inquiry subsequently.
Now, when all of this finally emerged, that the heavy gang were, if you like, out of control, and there were other cases as well, maybe lesser known cases, whatever happened? I mean, did any of them have to answer for...
Never. And I mean, I ran up against this myself. I had all the names of the guards and I had named them in the book. And it took me, because of that, 13 years to get that book published from when we were initially planned to do so in 1993 with Gillian McMillan. Their lawyers got involved and that was the end of that because I was naming the books, the guards. And so we went to a Blackstaff in Belfast, again, very, very keen to do the book. Brandon Press in Tralee, which was nearly sunk by the guards over the Kerry Baby case because Joanne Hayes published a biography with them. The guards sued successfully on the basis of the findings of the tribunal and Steve McDonough nearly went to the wall and he was afraid to take on the Nicky Kelly book, Marr book, because of that. So I went through six more publishers and eventually, to make a long story short, it was published in 2006 because I dropped the names of the guards. But by an anomaly in Irish law, there were two other books published about the Nicky Kelly case, or this Salins case, in 1984. There was Round Up the Usual Suspects and Blind Justice by Peter Murta and Joe Joyce, and they named the guards. But because that was deemed in law to be contemporaneous with the events, or the trials, etc., they could get away with it. The libel law didn't apply. But if I did it, the guards could sue under libel law, or existing libel laws, because it wasn't contemporaneous with the events.
So in terms of what Oscar Brannock wants, he wants this to go forward and get a proper inquiry. 50 years on, I mean, many of the participants are no longer with us. Much of the evidence would not be available. I can understand why he would want it, but is it possible?
Well, I mean, Jim O'Callaghan last March ruled it out. Said it wouldn't happen. That was shortly before the concert took place in Vicar Street. And I mean, it would be argued, as he did, and the Department of Justice at the time did, that the guards have been radically reformed since then. There's a guard ombudsman office, etc. It's been retitled lately. But there is another element to all of this that nobody really has addressed. It's the behaviour of the judiciary. And we touched on it at the very outset of this conversation. That continued through Nicky Kelly's case, which, I mean, the decisions in his case were perverse. It's the only word you can say is an accurate description of then. Because he'd been convicted on the same evidence as Oscar Brannock and Brian McNally. Yet they kept him in prison for 4 years. There was a huge outcry. The church got massively involved, the Catholic Church. The then Papal Nuncio, Alibrandi, arranged for Nicky's mother and two sisters to meet the Pope, Pope John Paul, which they did in December 1983, I think it was. So Amnesty International got involved, the American media got involved. It was a huge international story and fed into the problems or criticisms about Birmingham 6, Guildford 4, etc.
But isn't that exactly what this would be for the Irish judiciary, the appalling vista as envisaged by Lord Denning at the time about the Birmingham Six?
And if, pardon me saying it, Pat, I have a chapter in that book comparing and contrasting the behaviour of the Irish judiciary in the Nicky Kelly case and the British judiciary, particularly Lord Denning, in the Birmingham Six case, where they literally, they're parallel for to a point, and then the jail. And Lord Denning, as you know, apologised after that, making that drastic conclusion thing about alleging that guards or police in his case could lie. He retracted it and apologised for it. But when he heard what the Irish judiciary had done in Nicky Kelly's case, he said to Chris Mullen, a Labour MP who did a lot of work on all these cases, he said, they always were silly people, weren't they? Meaning the Irish judiciary.
Making matters worse, really, in a way. So is this the end of the saga, do you think? A certificate for the trio, one of them now deceased, Nicky Unwell and Oscar?
Well, I mean, the campaign goes on for an inquiry, for a statutory inquiry. I mean, as to whether practically it'll happen, I don't think so, really. As I said, Jim O'Callaghan has ruled it out. But the focus there has been entirely on the guards. But I really think you need to look at the judiciary as well and how they could make these findings in the face of common sense.
A final question, and it's really about the legacy of that whole heavy gang chapter. Has that, do you think, inhibited the way the Gardaí are policing in the modern era? In other words, they're afraid to even appear to be doing anything slightly physical with suspects.
There's no doubt that the whole culture in the Gardaí has changed massively since those times. It's highly unlikely and very rare, I would imagine, that guards would be as violent with people in custody today as they were then, willy-nilly. I mean, there were about 20 deaths in custody in a six-year period in the 1970s, which are never explained. I mean, there's so many mechanisms there to protect the public there. But on the other hand, in patrolling the streets, for instance, the Gardaí appear to either not be present or to have little powers or to acknowledge that they have little powers. And I was talking to an Indian woman last week over here legally working here, living in Dublin's inner city because it's the cheapest part of Dublin to live, who was beaten, badly beaten last April. And she was advised by well-meaning local residents not to bother to go to the guards, that nothing would happen. She did go to the guards eventually and nothing has happened.
Patsy McGarry from the Irish Times, well known to you one and all for his work over the years. While Justice Slept is the book we're referring to, and this is still available, I presume, out there somewhere?
I'm not sure. It'll probably be in libraries or second-hand bookshops.
Anyway, Patsy, thank you very much for joining us.
You're very welcome, Pat. Thank you.
The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Timber Living Log Cabins.